In this last section of our portion of the course concerned with abortion, I'd like to highlight three official declarations, or I should say three references to widely publicized statements that I would say demonstrate rather clearly and very alarmingly the direction in which our public discourse and the prevailing ethos is moving in regard to the subject of abortion. The first is the official response to legislators, in this case primarily then-Senator, now Vice President Biden, in regard to church teaching and statements on abortion. The second is the response of the North American bishops of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops to the so-called Phoenix Affair, the circumstance of an abortion that was performed in a hospital in Phoenix in what was then regarded as a Catholic hospital and which resulted in the bishop pointing out the penalty of excommunication and then pointing out and declaring that the hospital could no longer describe itself as Catholic. And the third is, in 2012, very recently, an article in the New England Journal of Medicine that was published which effectively inverts the normal Catholic understanding of conscience and heroism in a way that causes these terms to effectively have no longer any meaning in dialogue or conversation. It's a fairly terrifying specter, as I've suggested at the in the very beginning of this last section, that implies that the kind of widespread not only tolerance for, but concern about the importance and even the necessity of abortion is not only a part of public discourse, but stands a very good chance of becoming widespread and imposed. Let's look first at the bishop's response to then-Senator Biden back in 2008. It was particularly a response to the then-Senator's statement that, as far as he was concerned, life did begin at the moment of conception, but he went on to say, the question of human life is a personal and private matter, and he was convinced that these matters of religious faith cannot be imposed on others. This is a response to that extremely widespread conviction that one can believe what one wishes, but one does not have the right to somehow allow it to influence public policy. And the response on the part of the U.S. bishops through Cardinal Regale was fairly succinct and clear. If you drop down to the highlighted text, the statement that's highlighted in white with bold black for the first section that's highlighted in that way, the church recognizes that the obligation to protect unborn human life rests on the answer to two questions, and neither of them is private or specifically religious. The first is a biological question: when does a new human life begin? And Cardinal Regale points out that it's very clear, not only from church teaching, but in embryology texts, that a new human life, a human life that is genetically unique, begins at conception. And the church doesn't teach this as a matter of faith, it acknowledges it as a matter of objective fact. As far as the church is concerned, that which it reflected on, moved towards, and finally embraced has pretty well been established by science. So it is taught by the church, but it's merely the church acknowledging what in fact is very clear genetically, biologically, and embryologically. Life begins, human life begins at conception. The second is the moral question, which human members of living members of the species should be regarded as having fundamental human rights, such as the right not to be killed, and the Catholic Church responds, everyone. No human being should be treated as lacking human rights. And the text goes on to say, and to cite the Declaration of Independence, and this is highlighted in yellow, highlighting, those who hold a narrower and more exclusionary view have the burden of explaining why we should divide humanity into those who have moral value and those who do not, and why their particular choice of where to draw the line can be sustained in a pluralistic society. So Cardinal Regale, and indeed the U.S. bishops, reject the notion that it is not permissible to impose a definition of life beginning at conception on the broader public, and they also reject the idea that this should not influence public policy, that it is not just a matter of private opinion, but is in fact an urgent matter of fundamental human and not just social or political rights. The second case from 2010 was very widely discussed, and it occurred in the city of Phoenix. The case is summarized again by the U.S. Conference on Catholic Bishops. The Committee on Doctrine met to highlight and explain or recapitulate church teaching on this matter, and it has to be acknowledged that this raises the extremely difficult and, as we've seen, agonizing issue, already a matter of agonizing concern even at the time of Christ, and then subject to a reflection by the authors of the Talmud, and then by Catholic theologians over the centuries, particularly beginning in the early Middle Ages. What happens when the circumstance arises where an abortion is regarded as the only thing that could save a mother's life? Now, it needs to be added that in regard to this circumstance in Phoenix, although that is how the case was framed, it is not completely clear that that was in fact the case. The pregnant woman was suffering from pulmonary hypertension, a condition in which, as a consequence of pregnancy, blood pressure begins to rise. The statement was made by the physicians who recommended and then by the nun who approved the abortion that there were no other treatment options available. There was no there were no other means of treating this patient's pulmonary hypertension, that it was impossible to transport her to another facility, and that without the abortion, she would die. It has been impossible to verify all the facts, the medical facts of this case, because the biological and medical circumstances have been sealed and made unavailable for public reflection. But these are the contentions of the individuals involved in the case. There's good reason to doubt each one of them. The church would have absolutely no objection to using any medications that could be of value to the patient in treating her hypertension, even if it would have the secondary effect of causing harm to her unborn child, as we've already discussed. The idea of not being able to transport the patient is highly suspect. In most major medical centers throughout the country, one can arrange for transport that is almost indistinguishable from being in an intensive care unit. Virtually all the equipment and trained personnel can be made available for the transport and can be present during the transport, so it's a little shady and iffy as to exactly why that couldn't happen. And again, the blank statement that the only form of treatment available to this patient to save her life was an abortion remains an open question mark. Indeed, very recently in Dublin, a large number of OBGYN specialists and other scientists met, reflected on the current state of medical treatment, and concluded that there were no longer any medical circumstances that would necessitate an abortion in order to save a person's life. So the case, from the standpoint of the actual medicine, is rather murky. But the bishops don't attempt to dispute those medical facts, if indeed they are facts. The bishops presume that it was a circumstance in which the horrific and hopefully now rare, if you know, ever arising circumstance occurred where the abortion would in fact be the only possible treatment that would save this individual's life. And if one looks at the description, and the other complications of this, of course, were that when the press got a hold of it, Bishop Olmsted was held up to be a monster for having described the laetae sententiae excommunication that was due to abortion, which was simply his articulation of what is already church law, as we've discussed in detail. But also his follow-up to the hospital that if this in fact is their practice and policy, then they can no longer describe themselves as Catholics. Which, as a Catholic institution, which caused quite a number of commentators to raise the question, well, what right does he have to determine who is Catholic and who isn't? And the answer is, well, actually, he does have that right. That's the right that bishops possess in the Catholic Church. And this was a great source of anguish and clamor at the time. If we drop down, again, this is a very clear and difficult statement, that is uncompromising in terms of its articulation of the tradition. If you drop down to the text that is highlighted in white with a boldface red text, there is the statement that surgery to terminate the life of an innocent person is intrinsically wrong and there are no situations in which it can be justified. And at this point, Pius XII is quoted, and then if we drop down a little further to the next paragraph, John Paul II is also cited in a context in which he points out that it is true that the decision to have an abortion is often tragic and painful for the mother, and again, nevertheless, these reasons and others like them, however serious and tragic, can never justify the deliberate killing of an innocent human being. And then the conclusion, highlighted in white and in boldface, black type, nothing therefore can justify a direct abortion. So the bishops have rearticulated the tradition at this point, and Bishop Olmsted is declared to be in the right for what he did and what he stated. I might add that subsequent to this, to the clamor that this evoked, there were some attempts to rationalize, to justify the abortion, claiming that it somehow was not a direct abortion. In fact, the procedure itself could not be described as anything else, claiming, for example, that it wasn't a direct attack on the infant, but rather an attack on the placenta, or that in some sense the infant was an unjust aggressor, neither of which contentions have been regarded as legitimate. The third and most disturbing publication that I've included is actually a summary of an article which is available as optional reading. You are not required to read it. I think you'll find it rather repugnant, as I did, and that's part of the reason why I do not quote it and discuss it any more than Michael Cook did in his article, in which he mentions it, and that is an article by Dr. Lisa Harris, published, I'm sorry to say, in the New England Journal of Medicine, the debatably most prestigious journal, medical journal in the United States. And in this article, as we'll see, Dr. Harris uses terminology which is very important in the Catholic tradition, as we've seen on many occasions from the bioethical perspective, in a way that is diametrically opposed to our use and which raises the terrible specter of these words no longer having any agreed-upon meaning in the moral community, at least when one is in dialogue with the secular moral community. So let's look at Michael Cook's article. It's taken from the bioethics website BioEdge, which I strongly and heartily recommend to you. This is a very useful website, which I believe I've mentioned before, and should be regularly referred to. It does a fine job of summarizing things happening all over the world that are of particular relevance to those who are concerned to apply and interpret the Catholic bioethical tradition. His article is entitled, Does American Medicine Need More Vera Drakes? This is the title of a 2004 film, which, as he puts it, painted a portrait of a backstreet abortionist in 1950s England as effectively a heroic figure. As he says, she's depicted as a warm-hearted, generous charwoman who, quote, helps out girls in trouble out of the goodness of her heart as a result of one of her patients or victims, depending on how you regard them, developing an infection, having difficulties. She is arrested and giving a harsh sentence. The film's point is to portray her as both an abortionist and as someone who is acting according to her conscience and as an heroic and helpful individual. Well, in the September 13th issue of the New England Journal of Medicine, Dr. Harris effectively, and I've highlighted this text in yellow, argues that abortion doctors are brave individuals who defy, as she puts it, stigma, marginalization without medicine, harassment, and threat of physical harm to act in accordance with their consciences. And here I've highlighted in white the statement which continues her thought that if we only use the word conscience to talk about people who are refusing to provide abortions, then that, according to Dr. Drake, stigmatizes or casts in a bad light those who do provide abortions. And she says, and this is the highlighted portion, if physicians who offer abortion care don't have a legitimate claim to act in, quote, good conscience, like their counterparts who oppose abortion, the implication is that they act in bad conscience or lack conscience altogether. I believe that from the standpoint of Catholic moral theology, one would have to say that this approach, which Dr. Harris is attempting to stigmatize, is exactly what the Catholic Church does believe, that someone who voluntarily, knowingly, and with full awareness of the consequences performs an abortion is acting not in accordance with conscience as we understand that word. Conscience being the place within our hearts where we're capable of reflecting on that portion of the divine law which is contained within us and which we call natural law. Conscience is the place where that interaction takes place. And if one has blinded oneself, deliberately chosen to become numb to or to no longer respond to natural law, then in fact it is not a question of conscience, but of a deformed conscience. However, that notion is precisely what Dr. Harris is stigmatizing, and her conclusion is this understanding reinforces images of abortion providers as morally bankrupt, which is the position she is opposing. She, in fact, says moral integrity can be injured as much by not performing an action required by one's core beliefs as by performing an action that contradicts these beliefs. And without disputing that question, again, the issue is not so much whether or not people hold convictions deeply, but whether these deeply held convictions are fundamentally opposed to values that can be known by people who look within their hearts and look to the world outside them. The commentator on this article, who is a written Mr. Cook, then points out that there are no exemptions in the law for abortionists. This is the question that she is raising. If we speak of exemptions for healthcare professionals who want not to perform abortions, why should we not grant exemptions to abortionists who wish to perform abortions where it's illegal? She's trying to point out what she considers to be a logical or legal inconsistency or flaw in argumentation. And then finally, and this is the last sentence, and it's a quotation from her article, failure to recognize that conscience compels abortion provision, just as it compels refusals to offer abortion care, renders conscience, in quotes, an empty concept, and leaves us all with no moral ground, high or low, on which to stand. And I'm afraid one would have to agree with her that indeed the term conscience, as she is defining it or attempting to use it, is effectively emptied of all fundamental meaning. This is a very serious issue. For this to be raised and seriously considered in this very prestigious journal is a reminder of the fact that moral relativism, a point where notions like conscience and heroism and natural law are being emptied of all real content. They are effectively now being capable of defined by either participant in the debate, which means, unfortunately, of course, that real dialogue and discussion on this issue becomes more and more difficult, and which, of course, raises the question for us in the light of the new evangelization that is trying to explain and interpret and apply and make comprehensible for people the Church's teaching, especially for the baptized, for those who are already part of the Church. How do we do this in a culture where the language we want to use is already being appropriated and used in a diametrically opposite way by those who would seek to completely relativize such notions as conscience and heroism?